the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where I'm very pleased to have as my special guest Scott Bennett, Army PSYOPs officer and a whistleblower, and Michael Jay, who is a contributor, astute analyst of current events. I have them both here. We're going to be talking about a range of issues involving international affairs, the 28 pages that are being suppressed, and where it may lead in terms of revelations about who is responsible and why for the events of 9/11. Scott, Michael Jay, welcome to The Real Deal.
Jim, it's good to be with you.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
And just for the audience understanding, we don't have an image of Michael Jay, so he's the mysterious presence there, but you can see his name. Perfect. Scott, you have a wonderful book called Shell Game. Let's get the first image up, the first slide, a cover of your book. Tell us about it.
Well, it was originally a military whistleblowing report. Hopefully you can see it up there. Okay. This report kind of came accidentally, in which I met the Swiss banker Brad Birkenfeld, who shared with me 24,000 bank accounts that he had brought over from his adventures in Switzerland and had tried to get to tried to get to the Justice Department in 2008. And ended up being imprisoned by Barack Obama's Justice Department with Eric Holder, Lanny Brewer leading the charge, and Hillary Clinton contributing to the conspiracy. And it was a report that I sent up to the military chain of command, up to Congress, that essentially divulged everything Brad Birkenfeld had divulged to me. And it exposed Abdullah Aziz, it exposed the Saudi Arabians, the Qataris, the Kuwaitis, the Bahrainis, all of the Gulf Sunni Wahhabist government and royal families contributing to terrorism through these Swiss bank accounts. And it was subsequently the foundation of what we see now being revealed in the Panama Papers. And some of the damning figures that create the connections include Igor Alenikov, a Russian oligarch who Brad Birkenfeld was the personal banker for. So Igor Alenikov is connected to Birkenfeld, and Birkenfeld and Alenikov are connected to the Panama Papers. So that starts the trail, and it shows also the more you go down it, you see Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer, the attorney general, the assistant attorney general at the time, before they joined the Obama administration, had worked for a law firm called Covington & Burling. And Covington & Burling represented Union Bank of Switzerland and HSBC. So the chief law enforcement officer of the United States worked for the law firm that laundered money for terrorists and Swiss banks and all sorts of other shenanigans, and then gave them a pass in the too big to jail scandal, where Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer tried to invent law and say, we can't prosecute banks or else, you know, the entire country will fall apart. When in actuality, they didn't prosecute banks because they didn't want their own future jobs to fall apart, their own future $5 to $7 million a year jobs, which was what they were paid on when they left the Obama administration. And they went right back to Covington and Burling. And there's some other figures that are implicated, such as Dov Zakheim and his son, Roger Zakheim, Donna Shalala, president of the Clinton Foundation, and her nephew, David Shalala, who was my attorney, who defended me in a court case for a paperwork error that they turned into a federal charge and put me in prison for 3 years for, making a false statement on a housing form. So this is a miraculous divine demonstration of God's hands, and it's undeniable in the weirdness of it. But it's also a reminder that, you know, God works all things together for good, and what they meant for evil, he's meant for good, because we now find ourselves on a united front where Christians, atheists, agnostics, Democrats, libertarians, Republicans all share a common line. And you know, Jim, for military operations, you advance as a line. You advance as a military front. And we find ourselves advancing towards Obama, Hillary Clinton, and his whole colorful Keystone Cop crew of government cronies. And we're looking to expose all of this and bring in all the parties that were part of it. and the Panama Papers is the trigger. Now, the next thing is going to be House Resolution 693, which is Congressman Yoho of Florida and Congressman Randy Weber of Texas, in which they've introduced a resolution to investigate if crimes have been committed by the Obama administration and executive overreach has been committed. So it's the perfect syringe to inject this material. It's the perfect instrument to put myself and Birkenfeld up front and center.
This is to create a House Investigative Committee for High Crimes and Misdemeanors?
That's right. That's right.
Isn't that appropriate? Of course, that's precisely what the Constitution specifies as grounds for impeachment. Just for the sake of anyone who may have missed, you mentioned Dov Zakheim. Of course, he was a controller of the Pentagon at the time of 9/11, where Donald Rumsfeld used the occasion. He knew what was going to happen the following day to announce on Monday that the Pentagon had lost track of $2.3 trillion, where Zakheim was the chief financial officer for the Pentagon. I can hear Rumsfeld directing the section chief to bring all the documents and records relating to the missing money to the West Wing with all the financial experts and budget analysts so they'd be all together in one place to be taken out the following day, where Rumsfeld, as an experienced politician, would have known that a huge story like this presented early in the week would have legs and it would become a very big deal by the end of the week. Normally, it would only be released, say, on a Friday before a weekend in the hope that it would get lost among weekend activities and people pay less attention to the news. But in this case, it was as though he knew something was going to occur in the meanwhile that would obliterate his statement from consciousness and he'd be able to waltz into the halls of Congress and ask for hundreds of billions more in defense spending, which is precisely what happened.
Yeah, and it's precisely what some of the key members of my team at Booz Allen Hamilton had known about and watched and felt betrayed by. These were military officers of the old school, of your credentials, of my father's credentials, who believed in the honor of the military and the honor of America, and the military exists to protect America. The military does not exist to advance a military-industrial complex global hegemony, you know, banking operation. And my old boss, Colonel Jeff Jones, was the one who had sent me down to work for, to expose, and to be part of the solution against Dov Zakheim's operations at U.S. Central Command. And that's what they reacted to with such great hostility. Keep in mind, my assignment was tracking the financial assets and resources and personnel within Saudi Arabia. Al-Qaeda within the Saudi Arabian Peninsula was my particular area of expertise. And nothing I ever discuss is classified. So all of this is unclassified public information.
How perfect and timely, given the events that are taking place now over the 28 pages and Obama going to the defense of the Saudis and against the American people, which we will discuss in considerable detail as our conversation proceeds. But do you believe, therefore, that the Panama Papers are going to lead directly to Bill and Hillary Clinton and their shenanigans?
Well, I know of so many other connections to Bill and Hillary Clinton. This is just another one. I mean, this is essentially, you know, there are so many bridges that lead into this metropolis of chaos and treason. But the Panama Papers is one bridge. However, the Panama Papers, I think, really is a psychological operation that was engineered by the CIA that simply took the material that Brad Birkenfeld and I produced in 2012 and put a different dust jacket on it. They simply took the reports, the Swiss banks, the multiple accounts that Birkenfeld brought over and relabeled them under Mossack Fonseca. And they knew about this in 2008 when Birkenfeld brought it over. They knew about it when Edward Snowden was a CIA agent and they had targeted Birkenfeld and got him into a DUI and threw him in jail. And then the CIA got him out of jail. And the CIA knew about Birkenfeld. They had come after him. And there's story upon story that Brad related to me. And he subsequently come out and said it was a CIA operation, the Panama Papers. So there's a CIA fingerprint all over Brad's life before he was thrown into prison. And they also came after him when the Vanity Fair journalist was going to do a story on a lot of this. and they didn't want it getting out, so they covered it up. But now it's coming out, I think, in large part because of our efforts. This video that we sent you, Shell Game, was released one day before the Panama Papers came out. And it was a YouTube video compilation of all the images and story and facts of Shell Game that we just put out there on the public YouTube. And within one day is when this Panama paper thing released. And they say they had it for a year. I don't believe any of that. I think they were trying to do damage control, knew this was coming out, and their constant theme, their constant countermeasure, Jim, is to emphasize money laundering and rich people living abroad trying to hide their money to save taxes. But that's not the truth. That's not the real core behind the Panama paper, Shell Game, Swiss bank, money bank accounts. It's the illegality of it. It's terrorist financing. It's CIA black operations. It's Benghazi. It's drug laundering. It's money and gun running to Syria through Turkey. It's the Abdullah Aziz Saudi Arabian royal family following a policy that exports Wahhabi terrorists instead of risking their destabilization in their own country of Saudi Arabia. That's the stuff that Brad Birkenfeld and I discussed over 6 months. And a lot of people are implicated in this. Rudy Giuliani is implicated in his ties to Abdullah Aziz. And Osama bin Laden, of course, had UBS bank accounts. Osama bin Laden's brother had UBS bank accounts. And I know there's talk about him being a CIA agent. So there's a lot of stuff that was inadvertently uncovered that when we tried to report, they went absolutely ballistic. They went silent. They paid Birkenfeld off $104 million, told him not to talk. He didn't talk. And me, and for my part, as a military officer, I couldn't be silent. I couldn't let this sit. So I kept writing people in Congress, writing the military chain of command, and they all failed. They all did nothing. I wrote Fox News and everybody on Fox News. They did nothing. I ended up having to get the materials smuggled out of an airport in Pennsylvania to go around the prison mail system because I anticipated that they were meddling with my mail. I saw the warden come in and look into my cell and painstakingly dissect my footlocker. So I knew something was up. And there's all sorts of, I mean, fascinating memories I have now in that whole episode. I never dreamed it was going to lead to this. I never dreamed that it was going to expose such wrongdoing and such a vast network of conspirators. But let's just summarize the main parts. Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. She made a deal with the Swiss to throw Birkenfeld in prison, and it's all contained in the State Department cables that the WikiLeaks organization released. Brad had copies of those WikiLeaks cables. And when I met him, I said, Brad, I was at the State Department when those cables were written. You see this part that says State CT? That means State Counterterrorism. That was the office that I worked in. That was the office that I did PSYOP operations out of. So I was at the very location that was writing cables to hide Birkenfeld, to hide his diamonds in the toothpaste that he was running to Igor Alenikov, that we now see regurgitated in these Panama papers. And I think it was a PSYOP to try and destabilize, you know, the competitors or enemies of the United States, Iceland, the BRICS nations. They're putting a little pressure on Saudi Arabia. But all of it, I think, needs to come out a little bit more. And we're calling members of Congress right now, Michael Jay and I, and we are aggressively demanding that members of Congress back H.R. 693. They also become a co-sponsor, and they demand that Shell Game and the whistleblowing report that Birkenfeld and I put forth is included in this H.R. resolution. It's one of the facts, the incidents, the experiences of crimes that the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer were all conspiring to manage.
Well, you know, Scott, I think because of the outrage over Obama's trying to suppress the 28 pages, this just might happen. So my apprehension in the beginning, the first interview I gave to press TV about this, I was spelling out that I thought this was going to have that kind of consequence, that it could lead to revelations about 9/11, who was responsible and why. I know Michael Jay is eager to add a few words of his own. So please, Michael Jay, speak up.
Thanks, Jim and Scott. The thing that we're looking at is these people have been instituting these kinds of programs, and Scott's amazing and surreal odyssey wound him up in a halfway house that made all sorts of connections, because he was introduced to something called Deep Black. And Deep Black links the CIA and the Mossad in their ongoing half a century long drug importation programs that they started with another false flag called the Gulf of Tonkin, where they pulled millions and then multiplied it into trillions of dollars worth of opium and heroin during the Vietnam War out of the Golden Triangle, which is actually linked right now. Then it was the Nuke and Hand Bank, but now it's linked with their new opium cash crop of trillions of dollars worth of their black budget coming out of Afghanistan, where we've got United States military protecting the drug lords in the opium fields so that they can make trillions of dollars off of the opium fields in Afghanistan. And they used a 9/11 false flag, which Scott and I are calling the 9/11 terror wars, because it released them and allowed them to have a tremendous amount of money in black budget, but they won't. They'll take the money out of the United States. They will never pay any taxes on these trillions of dollars, but they were running those bank accounts, according to Brad Birkenfeld, through these Swiss banks. And that's why they freaked out when Brad came over and exposed and wanted to be a whistleblower. And they said, no, we're going to throw you in jail.
Well, this is just amazing stuff. Scott, you were right in the middle. You were like in the hub of all this nefarious activity.
You couldn't make it up, Jim. You really couldn't make it up. It was so humbling, and it was amazing. And I tracked, you know, I had been in the Bush administration since 2003 to 2008. I'd worked in Washington politics, and I had been part of Heritage Foundation. I was in the think tank. I was doing my PhD, and then I joined Booz Allen Hamilton. And went into the Army, was given a direct commission to do psychological warfare and counterterrorism, and then found myself in these, I mean, it was like a checkerboard game, popping from one square to the next, State Department, Special Operations Command, U.S. Central Command, Dov Zakheim, and that's where, you know, the whole thing took a turn for the surreal when they came down upon me, because they knew I wasn't playing ball, I wasn't corruptible, or I didn't have the zombie look in my eyes like everybody else did down there. For whatever reason, they yanked me out and, you know, then told me to be quiet, to not say a word. And I did. I kept writing reports, and next thing I know, I'm charged with a federal crime that I thought was laughable. But if I hadn't been charged, if I hadn't been put in the court setting, if I hadn't been betrayed by my lawyer with nonsense, and found, you know, guilty and thrown into a jail cell, which incidentally was another kind of a sub miracle within a miracle, because I was supposed to go to California, and in the middle of Oklahoma, the bus turns around and does a U-turn up to Pennsylvania. I don't know why, but I go up to Pennsylvania instead of California, and I run into Brad Birkenfeld. I run into the Swiss banker who had all the Swiss banking financial accounts and WikiLeaks cables and a treasure trove of intelligence that I should have gotten in the military, but instead I found it in prison. And that's...
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
That's just stunning, Scott. Stunning.
And they hate that, and they run from it because it's all trackable, it's traceable, it's documented, and it's miraculous. They can't understand how this happened or why it happened, but they're just running from it like the plague. And it's also, you know, it was given to everybody. It was given to Romney. It was given to Rince Priebus. It's been given to Trump. It's been given to Ted Cruz. It's been given to Bernie Sanders. It's been given to all the Republicans and the Homeland Security, Intelligence, Armed Services Committee, everybody who has sworn an oath to the Constitution and to protect You know, the average blue-collar American whose son goes off to war and dies or comes back a traumatized vegetable, these members of Congress and these military elites and these journalist media elites are supposed to be representing and helping the American public, and they've done absolutely nothing with this. It's only by the grace of God that, you know, the internet and the alternative media exists, and men with character and intelligence such as yourself that have the audacity to speak this truth, to put it out there, to share it with American citizens. And every citizen owes you a debt of gratitude for having the balls to do it, Jim.
You know, Scott,
well, this is appalling. Yeah, Michael J., yes, chime
in. The introduction of this new House Resolution 963, I think that's its name, could be 863, but by Congressman Yoho and Congressman Weber from Texas. Yoho is from Florida. This is a huge can opener on this can of vile worms that we're talking about, this public serpent conglomerate that calls itself the American government, because Scott and I are really excited about this, because this puts the whole situation in the hands of the American people, with every one of their representatives can be confronted with the reality of looking for and investigating, setting up an investigative task force and select committee to examine this administration for high crimes and misdemeanors, including misprison of felony and misprison of treason. Jim, we're excited because this door that's opened up is a door where millions, literally millions of Americans can flow into this door and say, we want accountability. We're tired of your people turning this nation over to the New World Order and destroying everything we hold precious.
Listen, Michael J., there are inquiries from the chat room about the show and your background. Could you introduce yourself? We're making an effort to get a photo up since you're the cameras.
Well, I did send you in your email, and Scott, I sent you a photograph. Praise God. I hope it doesn't break anything when you get it. But anyway, look at I won the lottery in 1970, Jim.
Literally, you actually won the lottery.
I won the lottery. I was number 16. They gave me an all expenses paid trip to Vietnam in the infantry.
You won the lottery.
That's right. I got all new sets of clothes. They were all green.
The draft lottery.
That's right.
Lucky guy.
What a guy. And so, but the first unit I served in, because Nixon was standing us down, I was in 11th Armored Cavalry, wound up driving Lee Sheridan in the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment out in the jungle. And I thought it was because they liked me, but actually they put their tracks right behind my tracks. So if I didn't hit a mine, they wouldn't hit one either. Hallelujah. So then after that unit stood down, I went north and spent time in three air mobile infantry units in the 23rd Division of AmeriCal. And, I had a lot of experience there and came back, and I found out that Vietnam was a false flag. We intentionally lost. I was in profound grieving when I learned about something called the rules of engagement, which let me understand that this was political war and there were enemies out there that we didn't have the right to shoot until they shot at us. And then I found out later that the largest United States owned refinery in all of Southeast Asia was in the north end of Haiphong Harbor. It was owned by Exxon, who was supporting the North Vietnamese against the Americans. And then I started getting angry, Jim.
Michael, that's shocking. I didn't know this little tidbit, this little factoid about the war in Vietnam. How disgusting.
You didn't have to worry, brother, because that area was not on the bombing list. It was off limits to United States bombers, so they didn't have to worry.
Yeah, my dad was a fighter pilot in Vietnam. Jim, he was a Marine like you. He's a Marine aviator in Chulai in 68, 69 with the Republic of Korea Marines, as his ground assortment. He even flew with McCain, said he was a terrible pilot and crashed four planes or something in Pensacola. But my dad did bombing in Vietnam, and he was the model of a Marine as a military officer. He was my model. And I didn't see anything like that in the current modern American military. It's metrosexual, hermaphrodite transgender social experiment. It's not about winning wars. It's not about defending the Constitution or our nation from invasion. It's about one long, endless federal government job system that people, you know, can you know, make reflective of every sort of immoral practice. And that's one of the reasons that the world hates us is because of our abuse of these Middle Eastern Muslim cultures that are essentially conservative in their character. And Kevin Barrett has done a lot of good work, I think, in identifying the misconception that all these Muslims are bloodthirsty boy raping savages. They're not. Only the Wahhabi Saudi Arabian Salafist type are of that ilk, but the Iranians certainly aren't. The Syrians certainly aren't. The Alawites certainly aren't. And Americans have been led to believe this, I think, because of the Israeli Zionist propaganda machine that infects the military minds. We've been infected with a lot of false information about the Muslim character. And it's led us down this path. Now, what do we see? We've allowed these people to flood into Europe, which is now going into, I think, a civil war in the next few years.
Well, I agree that migration is being used as a weapon of war and of cultural devastation. And, Scott, the reports I'm getting is that rapes are taking place all over Europe, Scandinavia. Sweden's become the rape capital of the universe. It is just not getting reported. You don't get any of this from any of the mainstream media. It all seems to be suppressed. Obama talks as though all these Muslims are a great blessing, a boon, something we should welcome. I think here Trump was right on top of it and saying we got to take a break and figure out what's going on. I think he's absolutely right.
Well, he is. I just did a Press TV interview and they were asking about Trump and the elections and stuff. And I said Trump and Bernie Sanders represent out of the box thinking because they, you know, Bernie Sanders, I don't agree with him philosophically or politically, but he at least is a little bit less establishment than Hillary Clinton, who is all about war, more war, and endless war, where Trump is about pulling back the horses that are out of control and making alliances or friends or peace treaties with Russia, with China, with Iran, not going and trying to bully them into submission. That's the idea of a maniac. If anyone believes for a moment that China, Iran, and Russia are going to somehow submit and say, oh, we now see the error of our ways. We now understand that what George Soros wants and Obama wants and the rest of these metrosexual game show hosts and Congress want, that's what's best for us as Russians, as Iranians, as Chinese. Now we're going to submit to the American Empire. Now we're going to submit to the Pax Romana, or as Michael Jay always says, the Pax Americana, as in disease. That's never going to happen. Those countries, those nations of Russia, Iran, and China are never going to tolerate the Western American modern, quote, progressive, I'd say degenerate, culture. They're never going to allow it.
And we're practicing neo-imperialism abroad. I mean, it's absurd. You'd think in this 21st century that we would know better than to continue the kind of colonialist practices that were characteristic of the 19th and the 20th. This is outrageous.
Well, we saw the establishment, the foundational philosophical discourse for this whole neoconservative geopolitical agenda laid out by Francis Fukuyama at George Mason University, who incidentally was a professor of mine when I was doing my master's. And we saw it in Leo Strauss, who was a University of Chicago professor.
Fukuyama, of course, was the end of history, right?
Yeah, Fukuyama was the end of history. And he essentially said, we don't need to know anything more. The distillation of history has yielded this cream of knowledge that is essentially all that we need to know to make the perfect society, the perfect world. And that is the balance of democracy and capitalism and, religion kind of doesn't even fit into it because we're all enlightened humanists. So now if we get our environmental stewardship and our economic productivity balanced out with a government, a world government federalism, the world will be hunky-dory. Well, that's what Francis Fukuyama said. That's what all the neoconservatives have said, from Bill Kristol to the whole clan of those guys. And it was destined to fail from the very beginning, because the religious impulse and the Muslim identity is never going to be replaced by economic materialism or worship of the state, which is what Hillary Clinton and Obama push. One of my professors, Klaus Rinn, wrote a book, Jim, you'd enjoy it so much, called America the Virtuous, The Crisis of Democracy and the Quest for Empire, Klaus Rinn. And he was a professor at Catholic University when I was doing my dissertation. And he summarized it excellently. And this is back in 2003. So in 2003, Klaus Rinn writes the book that essentially describes how we are on the wrong track. And if we pursue this track, it's going to result in absolute, desolation throughout the Middle East and the world. And he's been proven exactly right, because the desolation of the Middle East have basically caused all of this, all of the Middle Eastern people, some of whom are fanatical terrorists, to be displaced. And where are they going to go? They're not going to swim all the way to the United States. They're going to crawl over to Europe. They're going to go through Turkey. And now you got Turkey and President Erdogan holding Europe hostage. And the big failure is the hypothesis that Europe is one big landmass. They're not. As you know, Jim, and Michael J. knows, Europe is a hodgepodge of little separate countries and cultures and languages, from Portugal to Spain to France to Germany to Italy to Norway to Denmark to Sweden. They're all different. They were always separate before the Schengen unification, where they said everybody can ride a train throughout all of Europe now. Well, that doesn't erase the cultural pride that these countries have. And that's what I think is going to start exploding, which you probably don't see quite yet. But in Sweden and Germany, you see a right-wing backlash of young men standing up to defend their sisters and their mothers and their wives and their daughters against these savage rapist fanatics. And that's going to lead to Europe being a lot more militant and pushing these people out. And I think they're going to be much more friendly to Russia, because Russia and the satellite Russian countries are the only ones with the testicular fortitude and the strength of character to stand up and not entertain or allow for a moment these bad behaviors from these Muslim refugees.
Angela Merkel seems to me to be the leader of the stupidity here that is colossal. It's absolutely beyond imagination.
Well, Angela Merkel,
I think it's stupidity.
Go ahead,
I think it's intentional. It is intentional, Jim. There's no way that that person could be identified with her people, because her politically correct New World Order mindset is what Scott's been talking about, the demolition of the historical cultural values of multiple nations that treasure their historical significance and their gene pool. They are not, equipped yet, but they're given an opportunity. There's space of time. And the reaction that Scott's talking about is backed up by the former Soviet Union. The Russian peoples and the Orthodox peoples are saying our of faith and our culture is not going to tolerate this kind of invasion, this kind of infection of a culture that essentially their religion is a religion of cultural conquest. And they do it incrementally with creating their Sharia law ghettos and then intimidating everybody else into submission. But essentially this group of people that's been brought in there has been brought in there intentionally by the elitist New World Order in order to do exactly what they're doing.
I'm inclined to believe that virtually 100%. I mean, anyone who's ever paid attention to Europe, it's the most fascinating part of the entire world from the history point of view of culture and civilization and refinement and so forth. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating, and to be obliterated and submerged in kind of a blend of, you know, foreign immigrants and once magnificent, distinctive cultures. It's just horrendous to contemplate.
I think you're going to have a backlash because, again, Europeans, they do not have a hostility against Russia. I mean, all that Cold War talk and all that was really inflated nonsense. It was saber rattling, and it was inflated by the CIA. It was inflated by Bill Kristol's father, who was a CIA operative, and a whole group of those guys who were battling in Europe to try and win the hearts and minds of Europeans away from, Russia and the communists. And you also saw it in, you know, Gladio, Operation Gladio, where they were, doing attacks on their own European soil in order to blame, the opposing parties. But Europe is probably, going to be much more inclined to agree with Russia because they have a solution. The United States solution under Obama is to tolerate and to help and to encourage more of these Muslim refugees, I won't even call them refugees, Muslim invaders, and some of whom are terrorists, some of whom are parasites who don't have any desire to enter the culture, enter the country, learn the language and contribute. They have no interest of that. They just want to go in and occupy and squat. Well, that's going to cause, I think, a backlash. And you could have a retribalization of Europe. And in a way, they could divorce themselves from America altogether. Because if I was a European, I'd say, wait a minute, who do I want to be friends with? Russia, who goes into Syria and destroys these Saudi Arabian Wahhabists, or the United States that's funding, financing, clothing, and giving arms to these Saudi Arabian Wahhabi fanatics? Who do I want to side with?
And it's probably even Michael Flynn, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, has reported that Obama was aiding and supporting ISIS, which, of course, we know was made in the USA. I mean, it's totally disgusting. And who this Obama thinks he is beyond me, because he's been a traitor to the United States. He violated his oath of office. He deserves to be impeached. I think that this House resolution may open the door to a very dark end of his legacy. His 8 years in office. I think they're going to come to a very unhappy end.
Well, I think the group that gave the Nobel Prize group that gave this monster a Nobel Prize, and then didn't say anything when he started murdering thousands of people, when, you know, maybe one out of every 30 was their intended target. All the rest were collateral damage with drones. I mean, this guy is a criminal, a mass murdering criminal that needs to be indicted, tried for treason and war crimes, and then he needs to be hung on international television.
And the American people swoon because he was tall, dark, and handsome. I mean, you got to look at his actions, his behavior, his conduct, which has been despicable, including fabricating all these phony events like Sandy Hook and San Bernardino and being behind even the Boston Marathon. I mean, one fraudulent event intended to instill fear into the American people after another and attempting to take away our guns. This is completely calamitous and a despicable undermining of the Constitution and that for which it stands.
Well, don't you see the amazing backlash happening with the millions of supporters of Trump? These are real Americans saying, we need you to lead us out of this terrible dark valley of deception and treason that the establishment and their propaganda organs of the media have been perpetrating against the American people and destroying our education, destroying our healthcare system, giving us everything that's poisonous, everything that's hateful, and then opening the doors to the Trojan horse of these trained ISIS operatives that are trained. And the fact is that there is evidence, ample evidence, that the numerous, like almost 1,000 mosques that were bought paid for and built by the Saudi Arabian money is probably filled with arms and ammunition, probably the ammunition that the Homeland Security purchased over 1.5 billion rounds of hollow point ammunition that is against the international law to use in war, but you can use it against your own people. These are killing ammunition, not warfare ammunition.
I know, it's absolutely staggering. And then the United States military converts the 40 caliber hollow point. When, as you observe, it's a violation of the Geneva Conventions to use this in warfare.
That's right. So
we have enough rounds, 5 or 6, for every man, woman, and child in the United States today.
Well, Jim, the deciding factor is going to be what the American people do. They do have blood on their hands through the process of democracy. I don't care what anyone says. You don't have any excuse. You can't say your head was buried in the sand and you didn't know, because you stuck your head in the sand and you chose to keep it buried there. You've been told, you've been informed, you've discovered. Now, as Mike has said before, you flash the card that says friend or foe.
Jim knows about that. Identify friend or foe, Jim. You know about that.
Sure, of course.
And that's where we're going to be talking to these people in Congress and Senate and the governors and whatever. And we need to find out from them, whose side are you on? You're on the side of America or the New World Order. Are you going to continue to break your oath? Or are you going to stand with the Constitution, because we took that same oath?
Well, every citizen who listens to your show, Jim, for example, can take what we've done in these calls to Congress, and they can call their own representative and their own senator, and they can say, Senator, I have been made aware of a report called Shell Game, which is the foundation of the Panama Papers, and I am sharing it with you to share with Congressman Yoho and Congressman Weber. You are my representative. I have now made you officially aware of this whistleblowing report that describes felonies and treason that have been committed against the United States of America and our military personnel and our allies. I'm recording this video on Skype, and I'm giving it to you, Congressman and Senator, with the explicit instructions that you give it to Congressman Yoho and Congressman Weber as pursuant to H.R. 693, that House resolution. If you do not, you're guilty of misprision of a felony.
Well, I think that's excellent, simply excellent. I think this could really be the event that blows things apart. Scott, let's move to the second slide. This is an interview you gave with Press TV.
Yeah.
About Iran. Tell us about it.
Well,
it's ludicrous on its face. You know, I mean, Iran had nothing to do with 9/11. So where comes this fee, $10.5 billion that Iran is supposed to pay?
Yeah.
Iran is a peace-loving nation that hasn't attacked any other country since 1775.
Yeah. This was when the story came out that a New York or New Jersey court had awarded $10.5 billion against Iran for somehow contributing to the attacks on the World Trade Center tower. And it was, in one sense, laughable, but at the same time, very advantageous, because it allows Iran to step in and, on appeal, introduce every piece of evidence and every expert testimony and every theory that can be used to debunk the entire 9/11 story, the government narrative. So Iran theoretically can step into the fight in a way that no other American citizen can, and say, okay, if you're going to accuse us, we're going to make a defense. We are going to posit all of this information as our defense. And for example, Scott Bennett, he contacted the lawyers that were involved with this prosecution and said, if you're going to try and prosecute Iran, then why don't you use my information to prosecute Saudi Arabia as well? Well, that law firm conveniently erased and didn't contact Scott Bennett ever again. They didn't want anything to do with the Saudi Arabian material. They just wanted to contact Iran. So that right there raises a red flag of prosecutorial misconduct, of judicial indiscretion, because I contacted the law firm and said, not only can you look at Iranian banks, you have to look at Saudi Arabian banks. And incidentally, Brad Birkenfeld exposed all of this in the Swiss Bank Shell Game report. Well, that law firm didn't do anything with it. So Iran can introduce that. They can introduce you, Jim. They can introduce Barbara Fetzer or Barbara Honegger. They can introduce Susan Lindauer. They can introduce all of the experts who have done the research that demonstrates all of the various tangents of material and theory that completely dissolves the government narrative. Physically, with regards to the towers falling under the weight of kerosene melted steel, the irrational belief of planes crashing in, as Michael Jay in his Air Force experience has pointed out, no plane would crash into a building that way. They would crumple against the steel and cement reinforced columns. You've identified brilliantly, Jim, the absence of actual physical, engines and things that belong to the plane and the artificiality or introduced fake engines. Never mind Building 7 falling on its own footprint as a result of an office fire, then getting into the Pentagon attacks, the absence of all plane material. And Jim, I was in Washington, D.C. at the time. I drove by the Pentagon every time I went up to Catholic University for my doctorate. And there was no plane. There was no scorched grass. There was nothing but a big blue tarp on the side of the Pentagon building the day after. The day after 9/11 was when I drove up to Catholic University, and I looked on my right-hand side as I'm driving up George Washington Parkway, and there was nothing there. There was no yellow tape. There was no bodies. There was no forensic. There was nothing, and this was the day after 9/11. So I have
first seen it. On the scene at the time, Jamie McIntyre for CNN was reporting from his close personal inspection, there was no sign of any plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon, right there at the time, Scott.
Yeah.
You know, so, in a plane crash supposedly filled with people, there are literally thousands of pounds of charred human flesh, and nothing was ever found.
Ever. Oh, I know. It's all ridiculous. They didn't even recover the engines, which are simply virtually indestructible. The approach was aerodynamically impossible, hitting a series of lampposts with no effects, ripping the engine apart, causing it to cartwheel over the lawn, which did not happen, is another impossibility. The whole thing is absurd. Scott, I want to leap up forward to slide number 5. Because here's another presentation you've given I'd like for you to address. This is about resource-rich Afghanistan and why we went into Afghanistan, which I believe was to exploit its mineral resources and to protect the poppy crop, where it has one of the largest deposits of lithium in the world, rivaled only by one in Bolivia.
Well, this was the interview on Press TV in which they're looking at Afghanistan and the military-industrial complex, and one of the products and the crops of Afghanistan, of course, is opium and the drug trade. And opium and the drug trade was what, ironically, and this is the other example of how this whole journey has been surreal and Alice in Wonderland meets the Twilight Zone adventure. Because when I was thrown into prison, they bust me out to California to release me despite 2 years of working behind a typewriter with lawyers around me who were imprisoned also, writing motions, demanding a new trial, demanding my evidence be brought up, demanding Brad Birkenfeld be brought in as part of my evidence. And of course, they denied every motion and just left me on this island of misfit toys as if, you know, they were hoping I was going to go away. But when I get out, all of this starts coming out and Press TV starts contacting me. And I said, you know, what's interesting about the Afghanistan, the opium crops and drug trade is that Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer under Obama were teaching inmates this very same thing in a federal prison in a class called Deep Black. Deep Black was a syllabus, and I've got the copy of it here. It was a syllabus that was based on David Guyatt's 1997 CIA secret drug wars. So this was the syllabus that was being given to inmates in federal prisons, some of whom had been in for 25 years for drug crimes, and they're being taught by the Department of Justice that the CIA runs the drug operations in this country, and they've been doing it since the 1950s and 60s, and I almost fell off my chair. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that the Department of Justice is teaching inmates this very thing. However, then it struck me they were doing this to sow the seeds of future criminal activity so they can keep these prisons populated. They can keep the stock of GEO services high and mighty. But I did contact the Justice Department and the courts and exposed this and included it in a motion and demanded the court, the judge, Virginia Hernandez Covington of the Middle District of Tampa, I demanded she investigate this because it was either brainwashing of inmates or it was exposing government corruption within the CIA. And the courts have a duty under the Constitution to investigate sua sponte the illegality. Well, they did absolutely nothing. But this Press TV interview was the first time it got out. And it's funny that no American journalist, no American newspaper, no American TV station would even touch this or talk to me about this. But it was opium being run through the CIA drug operations out of Afghanistan, through Coronet Oaks, Puerto Rico, through various other channels that a lot of people who've worked in the system know about. Chip Tatum is a wonderful man that we talk to regularly and knows a lot about this. Stu Webb is known about it as well. Others who've been in the Vietnam era who can testify about cocaine being sewn into the bodies of GIs coming back from Vietnam.
That was heroin, brother. That was heroin, but the cocaine went into Mena, Arkansas, and Webb knows a whole lot about that because Mena, Arkansas was run by the Clintons then when he was being groomed for the presidency, and Chip Tatum was mentioned in this book, Deep Black, because he was ferrying around a Mossad assassin that was also part of the CIA, bringing the drugs up from the Medellin cartel. So go on.
Well, what it tells us, because it's so overwhelming and daunting for so many Americans, what it tells us is you have a choice. You either do something with this material. You define yourself with this knowledge, and you act upon it in, you know, the best interests of you, your family, your children, and your future and your country, or you do nothing, or you sit back on the couch, drink your beer, take your opiate, take your mood enhancing drug and do nothing and pretend it doesn't exist. Pretend tomorrow will be as it was today. You know, indulge yourself in the luxury of Americana. And the illusion of freedom that you have. And as for me, I will never do that. I will always fight till I'm dead on the ground and the breath's out of my body. But then I'm, of course, with the hope of resurrection. But Americans have a choice. And if they don't stand up and really demand a complete overthrow of this current leadership in Congress and the presidency and these types of military industrial lobbyists that have been running the country for 15 years, then they're not worthy of freedom, Jim. They're not worthy of being called Americans because they're nothing but slaves. And Europeans, I mean, should be mad as a hornet at what we've done to Europe. Europe didn't do this to themselves. They followed our lead. They let us use their lands as bases to do these operations against Libya, against Iraq.
Scott, before we take a break, I'd like to squeeze in one more slide, number 7, where you're talking about Syria. If we could get your comments about what was going on here.
Well, this was the Saudi Arabian-Syrian conflict Press TV interview in which they were examining the Saudi Arabian financing. And this was also exposed by RT. RT had found a cache of documentation which came right out of the Saudi Arabian banks that were buying the oil, smuggling the oil, sending it to Turkey, sending in mercenaries. And Saudi Arabian has blood on its hands for what they've done to Syria. And Hillary Clinton, of course, had received money from the Saudi royal family to the Clinton Foundation. And they had exorbitant speaking fees. Hillary Clinton, as Bill Clinton too, were benefited by the Saudi royal family. Also, Union Bank of Switzerland gave money to the Clinton Foundation. Of course, Union Bank of Switzerland was the bank that was used by Abdullah Aziz. Abdullah Aziz being one of the crown princes of Saudi Arabia. So the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton buried Brad Birkenfeld, put him in prison to silence him so that they could keep Saudi Arabia and Abdullah Aziz and Union Bank of Switzerland out of the headlines. And they could keep their terrorist financing networks undiscovered. And that's what they've used to do these CIA mercenary operations, Scott, in Iraq, in Libya, and Syria.
Scott, this is fantastic stuff. We're going to take a break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal with Scott Bennett and Michael Jay. We'll be right back.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on Network Radio.
So turn off your television set. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
Say with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Scott Bennett and Michael J. Scott. I got to say, I've just been mesmerized by your explanation of these intricacies, and it looks as though the Panama Papers are going to prove to be rather profound in their significance.
Well, it's a pretty easy sell to simply say, look at history, look at the document trail, look at 2007, 2008. You have a Swiss banker who's run out of Switzerland, and he's pursued by the CIA, and Edward Snowden was a CIA operative at the time. He was an analyst in Bern, Switzerland, and Brad Birkenfeld was thrown into a DUI situation. The CIA got him out of prison, and they said, turn for economic espionage purposes, et cetera, et cetera. He refused. He packed his bag, and he fled over to the United States, and he goes into the Justice Department, and he says, I want to give you everything I know about Swiss banks being used for money laundering, drug trafficking, illegal offshore bank accounts, terrorist financing. Here are the cell phones. Here are the hotel rooms. Here are the conferences they go to. Here are the names of the bankers. Here's everything I know as a Swiss banker. And what does the Justice Department do? They share it with the CIA. They share it with the NRO and the NSA. And suddenly a letter gets sent to the Union Bank of Switzerland claiming to be written by one of Brad's friends in the hopes of having him assassinated or arrested, probably. But that's what happened to Brad. And then he continues and he goes down to Senator Carl Levin and he gives all this stuff under a subpoena power. And then Carl Levin and the Senate betray Brad and prosecute him with the very material that he gave to them. He told them about. Specifically, Igor Alenikov. Well, they throw Brad in prison and let him stew and make a deal with Igor Alenikov, make a deal with all these other Swiss bankers at UBS, and leave Brad to rot in prison. And then he meets me, and we put this together, and I say, you're the guy I was looking for. You're the guy who had...
Amazing!
Yeah,
you're in prison.
In prison,
Scott,
in the same,
just stunning.
In the same housing complex. I mean, we'd go up to a rock garden in Pennsylvania with a few of our friends and sit around a table. You know, one guy was an old special forces colonel, and another guy was a 9/11 expert. And we'd talk about this because we couldn't believe it ourselves, and we cobbled it together into a report and sent it up the food chain. Well, the next thing you know is all the members of Congress and the military start getting this, and they go into panic mode. And what do? They pay off Brad Birkenfeld $104 million on the very same day as Benghazi, September 11th, 2012. So it was very suspicious that Benghazi occurred the same day that they paid off Birkenfeld $104 million. Now, maybe if you track the accounts, some of the money that was supposed to go to Birkenfeld never actually got to Birkenfeld. Perhaps that wire transfer, $104 million, was going into other bank accounts around the Benghazi day so that all eyes would be off of him and that money. All eyes would be looking somewhere else that they didn't want you to look. But Birkenfeld and I discovered this. We put it together. We started, you know, adding things up. The Panama Papers comes out later, and it simply regurgitates the same thing that Birkenfeld had reported. And now you see it, you know, kind of snowballing into a larger issue that RT and Press TV and others are looking at. So it's exciting to be there, but we have to hold our leaders accountable. We have to go to Congress and the Senate and say, you know, here's a record right here as a record of all the letters that I sent to members of Congress, the military, and the media in a book called Exhibits. in its whistleblowing letters to the U.S. Congress, military officials, and the media about terrorist financing links to Edward Snowden and the Booz Allen Hamilton UBS reports, and hold these members of Congress accountable and demand that they back this House Resolution 693 and back the exposure of this Birkenfeld Panama paper thing, because military troops are dead because of it. So
let's review some of the bidding that got us to where we are today. The slide here is about how before the New York primary, Bernie Sanders called for the release of the 28 pages from the 9/11 report, where, of course, as we have already been explaining, they involve Saudi financing for aspects of 9/11, a couple of the so-called hijackers, none of whom were actually aboard those planes on 9/11, a half a dozen of whom turned up alive and well the following day and were interviewed by the UK press. I mean, just that amount, Scott, you would think the American people would realize if a half a dozen of these guys turned up alive and well, then they weren't aboard the planes. And if they weren't aboard the planes and they weren't commandeering them to cause them to crash, whether Pentagon, Shanksville, or New York, and that ought to be raising questions in their minds about it, what anyone died in any of those plane crashes, which we've been able to prove subsequently did not take place. None of those planes actually crashed on 9/11. None of the passengers aboard them died. There were no terrorist hijackers who commandeered them, which means the whole proposition, the whole predicate for the war on terror, the invasion of Iraq and Libya and Afghanistan and all that was just a pack of lies.
Well, we have to put ourselves in a mental attitude similar to when you discover someone, a soldier comes to you with a wound and your first impulse is to feel sorry and sad and protective and angry about who shot the soldier. When you discover that that wound was self-inflicted, was self-shot, they did it on purpose, then your whole attitude, your whole being changes because you realize you were lied to, number one, but then you realize the lie was designed to achieve some other sneaky purpose.
Nefarious.
Yes, that's what 9/11 was. And that's where we have to really come out of ourselves and do an entire caterpillar transformation into the butterfly, an entire metamorphosis to say, wait a minute, we need a Nuremberg hearing. We need a combination of the McCarthy hearings, the Iran-Contra hearings, and Nuremberg all rolled into one. And these 28 pages, I'm sorry, it is obscene that we don't have a member of Congress similar to what they did in the Pentagon Papers rise up, read those 28 pages on the floor of the United States House or Senate. They don't have to read them verbatim, but they can stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen of the United States Senate or the House, I have just finished reading the 28 pages, and I am appalled at the unconstitutionality of pages. Here's what they say. And expose Israel. Expose Netanyahu. Expose Abdullah Aziz. Expose Saudi Arabia. Oh, suddenly in the exposure, you'll see the connection to Brad Birkenfeld and Union Bank of Switzerland and HSBC and the Swiss banks that were represented by Covington and Burling. And you'll see Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer and Hillary Clinton and President Barack Obama. Suddenly you'll see Covington and Burling and its connection to Mossack Fonseca. You'll see this whole matrix become three-dimensional that you never saw before. But here's the killer, Jim. They knew about this since September 25th, 2012. That was when Brad Birkenfeld and I put this material forth. Brad had put it out before when he came over from Switzerland, and that's when they threw him in prison. Igor Alenikov was the trigger, and Igor Alenikov is incidentally mentioned throughout the Panama Papers. There's a lot more that we're digging through. Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch is now going through the Hillary Clinton emails. So we are going to see in the emails the name Brad Birkenfeld, the name Union Bank of Switzerland. We're going to see in the text, don't let Birkenfeld get out because it'll destabilize the financial crisis. We want to make Saudi Arabia and Switzerland our pawns. We want to get deals from Switzerland. They use Brad to horse trade. And that's where Hillary Clinton comes in. She was the one that sold Brad Birkenfeld, threw him under the bus to get money for the Clinton Foundation. Her husband, rapist Bill Clinton, a speaking operation. George Bush, the retard of retards. And I work for the guy, and I'm ashamed to say it now, but that monstrous idiot also was put on the Union Bank of Switzerland board. Robert Wolf of the Americas helped design that. And he was also Obama's financial bundler. So we see a very small elite group of conspirators, of traitors against this country. And it has to come from the ground roots. The grassroots have to stand up as a tsunami of new leadership. People need to run for office on this very issue. I mean, this, I'm not trying to raise the flag or blow the horn like this is the issue of all issues. It's not, but it's the only one that I really have authority because I was there. I saw it. I worked there. I was in all the places that matter. I have the documents, and I run into the whistleblower himself, and I interview him, and I talk to him, and I look at all his stuff, and I see it through the eyes of a financial analyst tracking money supplies the terrorists use, tracking the terrorist money laundering and drug trafficking avenues. And I see it in Saudi Arabia. That was my assignment. So everything that Saudi Arabia did that Brad Birkenfeld brought and exposed, and the bank accounts of Abdullah Aziz, you can understand when it hit my bell, Jim, it was ringing in all sorts of ways. I mean, I was beyond excited. I was calling military. I remember one scene I shared with Mike. I was down in the prison with the assistant warden guy, and I'm yelling at the captain, Avraham Stone, my military attorney. I'm saying, what the hell am I doing here? I've discovered material about terrorist financing and nothing's being done. You're not doing anything. And it's all on the record. And the military covered it up. And whether it's out of fear or stupidity, both of which cannot be tolerated, both of which I think need to be prosecuted in the courts of law.
It's still treason.
Prosecuted in Congress. It is treason.
It's still treason. Look at, we need to bring something into focus here because this whole thing is still the PSYOP. I don't care what they're calling the Saudi role in 9/11. I believe they probably had some financial involvement in 9/11. But when Scott and I went to a 9/11, you know, memorial service last year, all the people that were brought there by government actually began to continue the mythology of 9/11. And we were handing out the evidence in a tract, handing out the evidence that 9/11 was an inside job and that it was a mass murder committed against American citizens and all of America in order to start the 9/11 terror wars. But we ran into people that obviously knew the truth, or they were so invested in the lie, they didn't want to hear the truth, because this ongoing promotion of Saudi Arabia and the being involved with the people with the box cutters, it's all a lie. It's all science. There was financial involvement, I'm sure, and a financial benefit so that the Saudis could allow us to be their agents to train all these other people and to give them weapons and whatever to enable them to invade and destroy the Yemeni people. All of this is about treason and mass murder against our own people and causing the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East. This can't be allowed to continue. It must be rebuked and exposed as a PSYOP.
So when I was interviewed by Press TV, when Riyadh was threatening to sell three-quarters of a trillion dollars in assets of the U.S., I explained to them that this was really fascinating, that it was a form of blackmail, that the Saudis had had a role here, no doubt, that we knew the 28 pages concerned financing for some of the participants, but that the 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, most of whom would come from the Project for a New American Century and were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, and the Mossad. and that Saudi Arabia, although 15 of the 19 alleged hijackers were from that nation, really were peripheral or bit players. So I made those very points already, Michael J., and agree completely with you about them because it's something everyone has to understand.
Well, thanks, Jim. But, you know, when they did this, they also proceeded to set up the high-tech police state with the help of Michael Chertoff and all these other dual-citizen Nazi Zionists in order to create the police state and TSA and the legalized molestation of who knows how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of little children and women and old ladies so that they could show their Nazi contempt for the American nation and the American public, all based on a fraud.
Jim,
Completely. 9/11 had two primary objectives. The first was to transform American foreign policy from one in which, at least officially, we never attacked any nation that had not attacked us first, to one in which we became an aggressor nation and started to follow the plan outlined later by Wesley Clark to take out the governments of seven nations in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran, where thankfully Russia has intervened and put the quietus to the Syrian dimension, and to introduce the Patriot Act and transform American government, taking some 35 separate agencies and integrating them into a massive Department of Homeland Security that was modeled on the East German Stasi, widely recognized as the most effective secret police the world has ever known, and to bring about the new surveillance, really fear-laden state where they use these phony attacks to manipulate us to promote their political agenda. So I agree 100% with you on this, Michael.
And Booz Allen Hamilton was the architect of Homeland Security. It was the contractor which essentially designed the entire agency. And I remember at Heritage Foundation.
You mean DHS?
Yeah, Department of Homeland Security was a product of Booz Allen Hamilton, largely. And Heritage Foundation guys that I worked with, some of them I thought had good hearts, but they were leaving Heritage to go run Homeland Security. They were going to be the lead political appointees and the bureaucrats in charge. So I saw firsthand everybody jumping off one bus and getting on another. I mean, I remember being on the Heritage Foundation balcony and having Chertoff group people there and seeing the cards and the business cards and the talk. And I remember some of the, Jewish Israeli apologists come and give lectures at Heritage Foundation blaming Iran for inventing suicide bombing. And it was nothing to do with Iran. It was everything to do with Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabist ideology. But they were setting up Iran to be their next enemy, as they've been trying to do for 5 years, if not longer. But we see the Bush administration had introduced all of this stuff, and the American people and the American military have been slow to rise up, wake up, and react. But you have to at some point. And I think, you know, I'm sort of the canary in the mine shaft, if you will, Jim, because I was part of it. I was part of the military. I was part of the military industrial complex. I was part of the Bush administration. And I didn't know anything about 9/11, as I shared before. One of the reasons that people like me, the right-wing conservative Republican appointees, never even asked questions about 9/11 is because we were psyoped into believing that anybody who criticizes 9/11 or questions 9/11 or accuses the government of participating in 9/11 is nothing but a dreadlock wearing body oil wearing Berkeley liberal hippie reject who hates America, doesn't have a job, lives in a teepee, and is a vegan. And all of the conservative right wing type of persons don't want anything to do with people like that. You know, they're crazy. They're, you know, just banging on a gong and, you know, free love and free money and free housing to everybody. That's who we were led to believe was defining the 9/11 questioning movement. And it wasn't until I was put into the prison environment that I was allowed the quiet, the isolation and good men around me, one of whom was Van Palmer, who smuggled out our reports through an alternative media, alternative mail system, smuggled it out of an airport under his shirt when he was in the prison. It wasn't until I met him and started discovering all this. And that's where I first heard your name, Jim, was through Van Palmer in prison. And Van was laying out the entire encyclopedia of everybody who knew anything about 9/11 and really opened my eyes. And then once you start questioning and you do the research and you let your brain percolate and you look at the logic of science and gravity and buildings and dustification and Judy Wood and Barbara Honegger and Susan Lindauer, the puzzle comes together and you're then met with a choice. Either you continue to assemble the puzzle to see the truth in its completion as best as you humanly can, that you commit to assembling the truth, or you don't. You turn the other way. You stick your head in the ground. You throw the puzzle apart and pretend it doesn't exist. And that's the danger. If we're run by a country of people who rather believe a lie and not look in the direction of truth and feed themselves on brain numbing medication and live like slaves in some sort of economic 1984 Orwellian state, those are people I don't want to be a part of. I'd rather die fighting to preserve the small island of traditional American character and society and culture. I'd rather die fighting to defend that land than be part of this metrosexual, transgender, hermaphrodite, cowardly, pale-skinned, amoral population, because that's not being a human being.
You know, Jim, Judy Wood brought out that right away she noticed that this was a psychological operation, and it was essentially trauma-based mind control where they used the cognitive dissonance that was created by this trauma and mass murder in order to shepherd us into a war footing and a war mindset. But at the same time, now that the truth movement and the 9/11 truthers have been gaining traction, and the 9/11 architects and engineers from 9/11 truth, and you, people like yourself, are injecting truth into the dialogue and into this the conversation of the American people, we're also realizing that we're watching a nation that's fighting to come out of a sense of victimhood. We're watching a nation that's fighting to come out of a sense of being part of a huge Stockholm syndrome mindset, because we have been shocked to glimpse the kind of evil that's truly manifesting in this generation. What do you think, Jim?
Well, I think it's taken this series of events, the calling for the release of the 28 pages, the information given to us by Senator Graham, who has been promoting its release for years and years, maybe as much as a decade, and Obama's going to Saudi Arabia, protecting Saudi Arabia. This has been like a slap in the face or a bucket of cold water. I mean, it's just amazing. I think only now are the American people snapping out of the illusion to which they were introduced by all the propaganda that surrounded 9/11 heretofore. I think this is the event that is causing the American people to wake it up, that we were not told the truth about 9/11, and it appears to be far more sinister and complex.
Yeah, this smells a whole lot more like a bucket of urine than a bucket of cold water, brother.
Well, Jim, you'll recall the film Dances with Wolves, right, with Kevin Costner?
Yeah. Well,
there is a significant transformation that occurs in that film that is very applicable to the American consciousness, the American citizen waking up and transforming. And to summarize, Kevin Costner is a army officer that goes out to the frontier, and he's filled up with a lot of training and ideas about the Indians being savages and being, killers and rapists and all of that. And he goes in, and to make a long story short, he interfaces with the Indians and he begins to learn and he experiences firsthand and he begins to assemble and learn the language and the knowledge and the culture. And he acquires, here's the key point, he acquires a new name, Dances with Wolves, Numani Tutanka Owachi. Numani Tutanka Owachi. That's his name, Dances with Wolves. And it's acquired through a miraculous event where he runs and dances with a wolf. And the Indians see this. And he begins to self-reflect that he never knew who he truly was. But as he heard his Sioux name being repeated over and over again, he discovered who he was for the first time. And I think American citizens can experience that same transformation of knowing who they are for the first time as real Americans when they absorb into the truth about what happened at 9/11, who is responsible, who the Iranians are, who the Russians are, who the Saudi Arabians are, who the Wahhabist ideology really is all about. And in the amassing of that knowledge, their true selves, their true American identity and their American philosophy and the rediscovery of American tolerance, of American patience and virtue and character and love and justice, all of which were the virtues that the world admired about America in the Ronald Reagan years and before, all of that will come back to the surface and we will redefine ourselves with a new name and a new identity and a new worldview and divorce ourselves of the lies and the poisons that were propagated by the Dove Zakheims, by the Dick Cheneys, by the Donald Rumsfelds, by the Condoleezza Rice, by the George W. Bush, and all those mind-controlled retards, all those neoconservative atheist, great world order type people. We will separate them to be put on the dung heap of history and probably hung and if not shot as traitors to the American cause and put this great bloodshed behind us and really embrace a new renaissance. And
when you talk about Native Americans, they may be the finest human beings who have ever walked the face of Earth because they wanted to live in harmony with nature. They had a great appreciation. They would only kill for food. They were basically a peaceful, sociable, positively oriented form of existence. And we came here. The Western world invaded North America and slaughtered as many as 20 million of these most magnificent human beings to ever walk the face of Earth. It's just tragic.
Yeah.
Also, I want to encourage people because all of us are witnesses to a very profound movement where the truth is now, even if it seems politically incorrect, it's getting traction. Some people that have been involved in the spiritual level of Illuminati evil have confessed to people that they have been taught that by 2015, they were taught by their masters that were involved in deep evil, that by 2015, they had been taught as young people that most Americans were already be in the camps. And we have really delayed. There's been a growing movement of truth tellers, whistleblowers, and the miracle of the internet has profoundly thrown a monkey wrench into their plans to get rid of the problem of people that believe in the Constitution. And we've got millions of people like Scott and me, former veterans like you, Jim, also veterans who still remember their oath, understand the precious gift of having been an American and learned how to lay down our lives for the people around us, learned how to train and learned how to appreciate the liberty that we've known. And this liberty movement, I don't believe is ever going to be stopped. It is not going to be stopped. They have been trying and we've been cutting them off the pass again and again because you don't need a lie to defend the truth. The truth will defend itself. And we're finding our strength in the truth and in each other
in others who also love the truth, who want the truth, who are confused, but they're coming out of that confusion and out of that fear. And this is very, very, very encouraging.
Jim, I wanted to add one thing to what Michael just said for a training purpose, that when we look at, when we discover the truth and when we have our eyes open, when we cleanse ourselves of the cognitive dissonance, which was retarding and restraining our willingness to look at 9/11, willing to look at the 28 pages, willing to look at all of those issues. When we ourselves have gone over that hump and we're now able to now question everything, when we've looked at these false flag attacks from San Bernardino to the Boston Marathon bombing to the Paris Charlie Hebdo attacks and others, when we've overcome our hesitancy to question these events, we're a new being, we're a new creature. And we have to understand, like Michael just said, we find nourishment with others who are similarly inclined and have the similar knowledge bases, the knowledge fountains that we have. We find nourishment and healing and solidarity with those people. But this is very important. Quote, "The enemy of a man are those of his own household. And there are people in our own homes, or our own families, or our own close associations that are adamantly and furiously and angrily against all forms of truth discovery that we have come to embrace. They hate the questioning of 9/11. They can't stand it. They'll call us names. They'll call us this. They'll be violently opposed to anything, any words, any questions, any observations that you made. And you have a choice. You have to reject them to keep them away from your personal heart, like kryptonite away from Superman. You have to completely divorce yourselves of them in a certain regard, or you will be pain, corrupted, hobbled, and crippled by them. And that's where we're at now, is separating the sheep and the goats, separating those who know and question from those who don't want to know and don't want to question. I don't care if it's a man's wife or a woman's husband or a, you know, a relative, a parent, a cousin, an uncle. You have to gird your manhood, your womanhood, your strength of integrity, and draw a boundary and not let those people dissolve your will, your curiosity, not intimidate you, not sell, you know, the false promise of, well, we just can't question anything or else we're going to be abused or our property taken by the IRS or anything like that. That's like saying, don't pop your head up because the Nazis, the Gestapo, will come and get us. Let them get everyone else, but don't you say anything. Just keep it your job and don't question anything. And then the next thing you know, like Mike just said, the Gestapo are knocking on your door and you're going into a camp, or you're having your kids taken away from you, or you're being forced to go through some sort of sensitivity training, like I saw in the Army, where guys were being psyoped into seeing homosexuality as a normal, good, you know, regular thing. And it was absolutely horrifying and corrosive. And it was when I challenged that in a report, 1 month later, I was indicted by the Obama administration. And I saw the Army memos that were targeting Christians as people who needed to be removed from the Army. They were flat out saying it. They've never talked about it in the mainstream media, but the conservative, traditional thinking person in this country has become target enemy number one. And I'll just simply close with, if Hillary Clinton gets into political office, Jim, you will see a hunt and a obsessive destruction of men and manhood in this country, not seen since the Nazis went after the Jews in World War II, or whatever other, you know, social group you want to identify. Because men, alpha males in this country, are hated by Hillary Clinton. Her lesbian ferocity and her hatred of her own husband, Bill, pushes her in that demonic rage, and she is going to unleash every government agency, every power of government, to attack, to suppress, to emasculate American men as best she can. And the only ones that will be left alone are the effeminate beta males who don't have any manhood anyway, who don't step out, who don't question, who don't do anything. They're parasites. They don't create. They live for you know, money and for quiet jobs and for satisfying and settling for what they have in America. They're not a threat. Alpha males are a threat to Hillary, and she's going to come after us.
Scott, I agree that the election of Hillary would be catastrophic for the country. I want to pursue this question of whether the 28-page issue can lead to further revelation, such as this. Here's a man who asked why tritium was found at 9/11 Ground Zero, recognizing that Ground Zero is a phrase that is used to describe the location of where an atomic weapon has been detonated. And the reason that question becomes so significant is if we were to leap forward to slide number 32, that there were massive dust sample studies conducted by the U.S. Geological Survey, and they discovered a whole host of elements that would not have been present had it not been a nuclear event, including barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium. This, Scott, is the smoking gun of 9/11. I mean, there are all kinds of issues. We know that virtually everything we were told about 9/11 is not only false, but provably false. But when you discover that the buildings, the Twin Towers, were actually destroyed by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes that were blowing the buildings apart from the top down, converting them into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it was done, they had been destroyed to or even below ground zero. And that these elements have remained in the dust, that seems to me to be the clincher for those who are capable of appreciating the significance of the findings.
Well,
look about the secondary and tertiary deaths of all the people that were the first responders or all the New Yorkers that were breathing that radioactive dust, and how long the half-life of these kinds of highly, you know, destructive elements were. Brother, we've got hundreds of thousands of people that were contaminated by this.
Yeah. Actually, the next slide, number 33, is about the range of unusual deaths that are associated with exposure to ionizing radiation, including multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia, thyroid, pancreatic, brain, prostate, esophageal, blood and plasma cancers. I mean, it's a staggering range and variety. As of March 2011, 1,003 first responders had died from these maladies, but today it's several multiples of that, I have no doubt. I mean, it's just dumbfounding
this was an act of genocide, Jim.
It's proof of the complete control over the major media that these results, among other places which were presented during the Vancouver hearings in 2012, have never been reported through the mass media.
You know, Michael Isikoff and Tom Hamburger came up and got all the information they needed visiting this officer, this PhD, in prison, knowing that he was framed, and they never used it at all. And that was what year when they went up there and you told them the truth, brother?
Well, Michael Isikoff had sent me a letter from NBC News right after Snowden went public in June of 2013. And I responded, I'd be happy to meet with him. I'd be happy to discuss all the material. And he came up with Tom Hamburger, who was a journalist at the Washington Post. And Michael Isikoff and Tom Hamburger sat down with me in a little room at Pennsylvania in the prison. And I brought with me all my documents, and I said, here's what I have. It's Brad Birkenfeld, Union Bank of Switzerland, Abdullah Aziz, terrorist financing. That was what I did. That's who I am. That's why I've been put in prison. I'm asking you to take this material and publicize it for Americans. We've already shared this with all the congressmen and the senators since September 25th, 2012. And the only one that's given any response, in a sense, was Bill Nelson. Bill Nelson, instead of saying, Scott Bennett, I've got your material. What have you got to say? How did this happen? What do you have? Give me the bank accounts of Abdullah Aziz. Tell me where the money's going. Did he say that? No. What did Bill Nelson say? Bill Nelson said to Senator Feinstein, this Scott Bennett guy is a problem. This Scott Bennett guy had a clearance and he got access to all this stuff. He represents a danger, as Edward Snowden represents a danger. We need to have tighter controls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Scott, that's disgusting. I mean, Nelson, the senator from Florida, I thought he was an honorable man.
Well, Jim, he's either a fool that's been fooled or he's a dishonorable man and a traitor. But that's exactly what he said. And I've got the letter, and I think I sent it to you via email. And it's a letter that he has on his website, Bill Nelson. And if you Google BillNelson.gov in Florida, he'll have on his website a letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein in which he's talking about me, Scott Bennett. And that is an indictment of him and the Senate Intelligence Committee, knowing full well that this terrorist financing network between UBS and Brad Birkenfeld and myself and Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks, all of that material was put into the report. I threw everything, including the kitchen sink, into that report so that if anything happened to me, there would be one big encyclopedic document that they could use and track down all of these traitors, all of these conspirators, all of these money sources, all of these people that should be shot, hung, and tarred and feathered for treason. And they didn't do a single thing ever. Not one single congressman or senator did anything. Not one military person did anything.
This is like when I wrote to 97 members of the Senate when they were debating the Iran nuclear deal to point out that all 16 U.S. intel agencies had concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons in 2007, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011. That even the Mossad had concluded Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons in 2012, just 3 weeks before Bibi Netanyahu went to the UN and declared precisely the opposite, and that the sanctions we were imposing on Iran were violations of Article 33 of the Geneva Conventions of 1949 that forbid punishing anyone for a crime that they did not personally commit. These sanctions were forms of collective punishment and therefore qualified as war crimes. And of the 97, I heard that back from none.
That's just what George Bush did in Clinton against Iraq and allowing thousands of those children to die over there with those sanctions based on fraud.
500,000 died from this no-fly zone over Iraq. 500,000.
Yeah. And Susan Lindauer knows that intimately from her days as a CIA asset, having met, she has a great story of calling Ashcroft's office and talking with the assistant who was in John Ashcroft's office about the intel, and they threw her in prison for a year. She also has a knowledge about a Japanese person who had dust samples of 9/11, and they came after her to get the dust samples and threw this woman in prison too. I can't recall all the details about it, but it resonates in your scientific analysis of some of these dust samples that indicate nuclear present materials. Not to segue too far, but we see thorium that's mentioned here also existent in the Harney County, Oregon lands that were being bought up by the federal powers, the Bureau
stolen,
of
Land Management. Stolen.
And Hillary Clinton is up to her neck with that too. Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio has done a phenomenal job investigating the thorium, Clinton, Russian bank, Vancouver shell company, operatives involved with all that. And never mind the Waco type assassination that occurred with killing Lavoy Finicum. Here you got a cowboy. Right. A blue jean wearing cowboy. You know, maybe he didn't do things the right way. Maybe he was, Jolly Rogers and just kind of going through the motions and he got shot. But this is an American citizen and this is an out of control military police state that did this. This wasn't an accident. This was a ambush. This was an ambush that was set up in the trees. These were trees that had their limbs cut off days before. This was surveillance on the
clear the field of fire. Unbelievable, Scott.
That's right. When Victoria Sharp came out of that truck, she looked down and saw 20 lasers on her chest. This was a setup, an ambush, and a kill zone. And the miracle was that all of them were not slaughtered, though they certainly tried hard enough to kill everyone in that truck because they did not want any witnesses.
It is truly disgusting. Just to add a couple more points about 9/11, here's a slide. Judy, I think, was the first to observe. Certainly, I learned from her Rudy Giuliani had arranged to have 115 dump trucks to take away the refuse and debris from the Ground Zero, in spite of objections from very high level authorities who insisted that an investigation had to be conducted first. But what Judy observed was they were bringing in dirt, vast quantities of dirt, which, of course, is what the Soviets did when they experienced the Chernobyl disaster. They brought in tons and tons of dirt. Well, it turns out that the dirt brought into 9/11, which caused the debris pile to grow, so that for the first several days, it actually got larger and larger on successive days, was actually bringing in a special kind of resin, M291 resin, which is involved in military-grade decontamination material they're putting on the site. I mean, you begin to wonder how much proof we need to have to recognize that it was a nuclear event, which is, in my opinion, the most powerful proof that everything we've been told about 9/11 is a lie.
Well, one study of health would be conclusive if you had a doctor's or surgeons or anyone in the medical community organize a study from 9/11 till now of all the medical phenomena that has occurred since then. You would very quickly conclude the aberrations and the obvious nuclear evidence of a nuclear event. You would see it medically. You'd have the same things probably that were experienced and medically documented in Chernobyl, documented and proven in New York City. And perhaps that's why Obama is saying, if we allow people to sue Saudi Arabia, they're going to sue us. You're damn right they're going to sue us. Every person who died or had a family member who has a deformed baby because of the 9/11 nuclear events are going to sue you, Bush and Obama, and all the other people in the world who've been traumatized by this have a right to sue. I mean, this
definitely needs to be a class action suit against this government and against the people that financed it, including the central banks, because of all the mayhem and all of the people that have died in this, all of these false wars and all the families that have been destroyed and our soldiers coming back maimed and the soldiers that were allowed to die under this VA under the Obama administration that Vladimir Putin called an act of genocide. This cult of death has declared war on our nation, our culture, and these people need to go down. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, well, I think the situation is as serious as it could be, and that we have been betrayed by our most trusted leaders, those we have elected to the highest positions of our government. And the evidence is simply overwhelming. I mean, just overwhelming.
Well, we have a Valkyrie moment. You recall in Tom Cruise's film, The Valkyrie, the opposition to Hitler were trying to decapitate the government and take out Hitler and his Nazi SS government rule. They were trying to do that so that Germany wouldn't be absolutely destroyed by Russia and the West. They were making a last ditch effort to remove Hitler and his Nazis, so that they could keep Germany at least living. They could apologize for the events. They could hold guilty and prosecute those who were guilty of these monstrous acts. And in one sense, I think we as Americans are in that Valkyrie moment where we have a choice. Either we go in through this HR Resolution 693, through the powers of the investigation, through electing new people to be leaders in government, and throw out those who refuse, exercise our democratic systems to have that Valkyrie moment and save this country by removing and exposing these evildoers and these activities mercilessly since 9/11. If we don't do that and we continue to toe the line in our ignorance then we should not be surprised when this country may be ultimately devoured and destroyed by the forces outside of this country that have a blood vendetta because of what we've done to the rest of the world. I could just sense something like that coming.
That's right. It's a law in the universe of sowing and reaping. We have sown the seeds of death across the world. We are ashamed of this nation. This nation is not run by real Americans. These are traitors. These people have used the American might, the American industry, and they've sold all the other industries out all over the world. This is why there's this amazing, joyful resonance with the truth that Donald Trump is speaking. Hope into the American people. This is a time for taking our country back. We can't back down. We can't let anything make us afraid. We can't, because everything really is on the line right now. All of us believe this. Every single thing that we hold precious in America is on the line right now. And this is our time. This is a time where we cannot back down. We've got to go forward. We've got to encourage one another. And we have to believe that America and real America is worth fighting for. You've got to turn our backs against unbelief and against discouragement. And we've got to say, this is it. This is the push. This is the battle of the bulge. We need God's help, and we need to help one another and strengthen one another, because this is really, we're coming down to the wire.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Let's go finally to slide number 37. I have this one up, by the way, of the destruction of Building 7, the North Tower, because how could anyone mistakenly assume that was a collapse? It's blowing apart in every direction. It's the effect of a very sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. Scott, I want to invite you to conclude our conversation by discussing this particular slide.
We got to go back to that slide. It disappeared.
No, he's got the slide.
Oh, I brought 37 forward. I went 37 forward, Michael J.
Yeah, 37 is the slide that shows very clearly the matrix between the Union Bank of Switzerland, Booz Allen Hamilton, terrorist financing triangle, the Bermuda Triangle, if you will, that connects Brad Birkenfeld, Edward Snowden, then connects to me through the prison experience in the military. And that serves as the core around which you see the Benghazi attacks that occurred on the same day that was paid off to Birkenfeld, $104 million. You also see the roles of the Obama administration with Eric Holder at the Department of Justice, who was previously at Covington and Burling, that represented Union Bank of Switzerland. He subsequently is returned to work there. You see Hillary Clinton in her Secretary of State role, where she secures a deal for Switzerland and Union Bank of Switzerland, for Switzerland and UBS and Saudi Arabia and Abdullah Aziz. Hillary Clinton throws Brad Birkenfeld under the bus. And you see President Obama, when he was a senator, he received this information of Brad Birkenfeld when Brad testified in the Senate Permanent Subcommittee of Investigations under Senator Carl Levin. Barack Obama was a senator at the time. And that was 2007, 2008. So you see that slide is the matrix as the blueprint that connects all of us together. And it's the cliff notes, if you will, to Shell Game, which you can see by just Googling Shell Game by Scott Bennett. And it'll bring up the whistleblowing report that exposed all this to Congress and that subsequently was the foundation for the Panama Papers.
Well, I'm so pleased to have had you, Scott Bennett, and you, Michael J., as my guests this evening. I think you've done a terrific job of covering some terribly, terribly important, profound issues that confront the American people. If only they will recognize the situation they're in and take the action appropriate to correct it.
Amen, Jim. And thank you for having the courage to have a discussion on this. I know it's volatile, but we need it.
We appreciate it, Jim, but you went before us in many ways, you know, examining the crime against the American people and against all these other nations that have been, subject to destruction in the 9/11 terror wars that Bush and Cheney gave us, and all their other actors and all the military people in complicity and the betrayal of all of our military people and the high treason that we're looking at,
and the terrible cost for human life and suffering, we can't turn back. This is our battle. This is our generation. And we're grateful that you have opened this door and are continuing to stand in the gap.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guests for being here. They have done a tremendous job, Scott Bennett and Michael J., and all of you for listening.
Hi, this is Gary King. Here's a song written when I was just 18. People have always enjoyed this song, and finally, 40 years later, I went ahead and recorded it. If you like it, download it on iTunes. It's called I'm Not in Love, I'm Just in Heat. Gary King. Go to iTunes and download it if you like it. Song for 40 years, played at party after party after party in the city of partying, New Orleans, Louisiana. If you dig it, go to iTunes and download it. I'm Not in Love, I'm Just in Heat, Gary King. And I also hope you enjoy the programming we provide here. And if you're into JFK, you can go to my YouTube channel, Gary King YouTube. And I do a weekly show with Jim Fetzer, Don Fox, and Larry Rivera. Hope to see you soon.